Well, hello, everybody. Good afternoon and good day. This is John Eade, president of Argus Research, and I'm with my colleague, our director of research, Jim Kelleher, today to present Argus analysts' top picks for 2022 to the Yahoo Finance Plus community. Again, welcome, everybody. We're thrilled to be here today. We're thankful for our partnership with Yahoo Plus Finance, and we're looking forward to the opportunity to talk about some of the stocks that our analysts like over these next 11, 10 and a half, 11 months. So, just a word about the Argus Research team. We've got about 20 analysts working for Jim and myself. We're based in New York City. We haven't been in our office for almost 2 years now, but looking forward to getting back soon. It's an experienced crew at Argus with an average of over 15 years of analytical experience and over 10 years of working at Argus. So what that means is our analysts not only know the sectors they follow and the companies they follow, but they're very familiar with our fundamental six-point system that we use at Argus to make buy, hold, and sell recommendations. We cover about 500 leading companies, U.S. companies, global companies, across the waterfront of industries. So we're going to be talking about stocks in the materials sector today, the tech sector today, financials, industrials. We're gonna hit them all. We do this presentation each year. We're glad to be doing it today. Last year, I'll say that our analyst top picks did very well. The market was up about 28% last year, and I think our average top pick was up about 30%. Now, of course, past performance is no guarantee of future results. But I think as we go through today's presentation, you'll pick up on some consistent themes and approaches we use at Argus to try to identify potentially winning stocks. And one more word of introduction. We're pleased to be doing the webinar this afternoon. We did a year outlook webinar a couple of months ago. I hope many of you had an opportunity to join us or have seen the replay on Yahoo Finance Plus. But in that year outlook for 2022, we did introduce some notes of caution for investors. We talked about high levels of volatility that haven't completely dissipated from the onset of the pandemic. We talked about uncertainty with interest rates and the Federal Reserve. And we talked about what typically happens in the midterm election year. It's often a challenging year for stocks. And our forecast for overall market performance was for a much quieter year than in 2021, when stocks, as I mentioned, rose 28%. But gains are going to be a little bit harder to achieve in 2022. And Jim, I think we've seen that in these first few weeks of the year.
You know, that's absolutely true, John. And so when our analysts were making their picks, they're well aware of all these forces and factors facing the market in 2022. So they were looking for high quality names that could make sustain, you know, blue chip finances, you know, leadership positions with their customers, and ongoing operating momentum. You know, maybe in a year past, we might have had a Meta platforms like a Facebook or a Peloton on here. Yet both those stocks, which are of course not on our list, have been shown to have flaws in their operating models. I think as we go through this presentation today, John, our listeners will get a chance to hear about the enduring strength in some of these names, some of which have sold off a little bit in the year to date, but have shown solid operating momentum during the reporting period to date.
So great, Jim. And one more note, this is an interactive conversation today, and we look forward to answering your questions at the conclusion of our prepared remarks. So if you have any questions, type them in the message box over on the right-hand side of your screen and shoot them over to us. Okay, so now let's move on to the picks. There's the overall list. It's there, and we'll go one by one, starting with the materials sector. And our first stock idea is Corteva, ticker symbol CTVA. So, a word about the materials sector. We, in addition to recommending buys, holds, and sells for each stock, we also make sector calls, overweight, market weight, and underweights. And the materials sector is one of our overweight sectors, based on, in part, our expectations for high inflation in 2022 and global economic recovery. So materials is an overweight sector, gives Corteva a head start in the race. And this is a stock that was a spin-off from DowDuPont back in 2019. Spin-offs are another opportunity that we often see in the market. And in particular, when a company is breaking into multiple positions, we like to look at each individual company and see what the management team is, see what the balance sheet looks like, and try to make sure that there's a real transparent line for earnings. And Corteva checks those boxes, particularly in 2022, when we expect strong pricing trends on all of its seed offerings, mainly corn and soybeans. And just a note on soybeans, they're selling for over $600 a bushel, and that's up from $400 in 2020 and about $360 in 2019. So farmers are very interested in their soybean crops. We expect them to be good customers of Corteva. We also note that Corteva has an activist owner on board, Starboard Value. And these activist owners, they don't necessarily shake up the companies. They're now more working in line with the management teams to achieve shareholder return goals. But the fact that there's an activist hedge fund on board at Corteva is another reason why we like the CTVA shares, and that's one of our top picks for 2022. Another idea in the materials sector is Nucor Corp. That is a steel company, ticker symbol NUE. One of the things we do when we analyze a stock is we look at the stock's performance. Is it beating the market and its industry over the past quarter? Does it outperform the market and its industry over the past year? How about over the past 5 years? If we can check all those three boxes, those are stocks we like to see on the Argus buy list, stocks that are outperforming the market and the industry over a number of time periods. Nucor is one of those stocks. So it's a consistent outperformer, which is a great point one to be able to make. In the same way with Corteva, the commodity prices that drive Nucor are certainly much higher now. Steel prices are up 12% quarter over quarter. They've almost doubled year over year. Nucor, and another theme you're going to hear we talk about today is dividend growth. Nucor recently increased its dividend 20%. That is a major signal from the management team that the company is confident about its near-term outlook if it's going to be increasing its dividend 20%. And also reflecting the company's focus on shareholder returns, they've got a $4 billion share buyback underway. There's a new CEO on board. That's another potential trigger for outperformance. And the Nucor shares offer some value with a 1.7% yield. higher than the broad market's 1.3% yield. So those are a couple of materials ideas. And at this point, I'll hand the call over to Jim to talk about the communication services sector.
Thank you, John. And let me echo John in saying thank you for giving us some of your time today. We're excited to share these ideas on the call. And I am going to begin with one pick we have in the communication services sector, and that is Alphabet. Now, the communication services sector is recommended equal weighted Argus. And it's a unique sector in that it's a what we call a barbell sector. On the one end of it are the internet and media names that were carved out of either technology or consumer discretionary when this sector was created in 2018. So these stocks tend to be high growth, high beta, low to no income. And on the other end of the barbell are the old-fashioned telcos, the Verizons and the AT&Ts and other traditional service providers, but their markets now in the age of the internet kind of overlap with some of the other communication services provider at the internet side of the barbell. Now, if we were to recommend one from the other side of the barbell, telecom services, our communication services analyst Joe Bonner really likes T-Mobile US. Interestingly, not a dividend payer, which is pretty rare for a telco, but growing rapidly in 5G due to the combination with Sprint. Now, looking at Alphabet, this is a company with at least three powerful franchises. First would be obviously search, but they've also been a leader in browser with Google Chrome. And finally, the provider of the Android operating system that dominates mobile communications. And really, there's only one competitor, obviously, that's the iOS from Apple. So one thing about the Google division as a leader in search also dominates digital advertising because how many times a day do we all turn to Google to find something and we're seeing ads on there? And digital advertising has got two major growth drivers. First, the world is moving more and more towards the digital and towards the online. And secondly, advertising itself is moving away from traditional mediums like print, broadcast, TV, and radio. But in addition to having these enormous franchises of search, browser, and Android, the company is continually innovating in areas like the public cloud. They're probably the third or fourth major cloud infrastructure as a services provider. And they're also in emerging areas such as AI and virtual and augmented reality. And autonomous vehicles is another technology, but it shows the way this company has matured. They're not going all in on, AR, VR the way Meta Platforms is, for example. They're doing this in a balanced way while funding their growth engines. So there are always antitrust concerns in the U.S., but we think right now Meta Platforms is the one with a big target on its back. So let's talk a little bit about our consumer discretionary picks, and no surprise, we have quite a few. The consumer discretionary sector also rated recommended market weight in Argus. Obviously, consumers are feeling pretty good these days. Employment is back down around that 4% level. More important, hourly wages are way up. But one thing that's up more than hourly wages is inflation, and there is all the ongoing health concerns. So on balance, consumers are feeling pretty good, but they're being cautious as well. Our first pick, Ethan Allen Interiors. You may think to yourself, well, in the age, we all know Ethan Allen showrooms, but what about Wayfair? What I would say is Ethan Allen is being really smart about going after key niches and bringing digital to their showrooms and as a way to get in with younger customers. They want to differentiate from the kind of mass market and deliver to your door, but not into your house, ethos that you get from Wayfair. Instead, they're slightly upscale, but also targeting younger customers. And what they're doing is also delivering new design. They're using new designer software, enabling them to work more efficiently with fewer sales associates, but also to really, work with clients to target how things are going to look in your home. And this is a company with a very healthy balance sheet, and it's one of our higher yielding names in our list of names on today's top picks. with approximately 4% dividend. Our next pick is General Motors. This is an interesting company. Unlike Tesla, which is all electric, or unlike the GM a few years ago, which was all ICE, meaning internal combustion engine, this is a company on its way to a future of hybrids and EVs and ICE engine cars, but and eventually autonomous vehicles as well. But they're being very prudent and rational about it, and they're protecting market share all across their multiple platforms and across their multiple regions. Because the company's mix is skewed towards Silverado, Tahoe, Suburban, some of the higher end pickups and SUVs, and away from sedans, you don't see a lot of you don't see a lot of North American sedans in general, but you don't see a lot of Chevy sedans out there like you once did. It's really a mix that's skewed to the top. That gives the company leading margins in the automotive OEM space in North America, and it's also these cars are so expensive they throw off tremendous free cash flow, and the company has gotten through the difficulties that nearly crushed it, back in the day, and has a robust balance sheet at this point in time. We're starting to think that the difficulties with semiconductor shortages specific to the automotive supply chain have peaked and are beginning to moderate. We get that from all the various companies that we cover that are outside the actual audio OEM space, such as a passive component supplier like Vishay, which talked about automotive leveling out, and given their place in the value chain, they're an early chain provider, so that's a good omen for a company like GM. And the demand is remaining strong. Consumers want new vehicles. There's a lot of pent-up demand, and we think that this demand will carry forward as GM gradually moves to get more and more EVs and hybrids in their outlook. They put the Hummer EV out last year. They're doing the Cadillac LYRIQ, probably in the It might get pushed to the second half given all the industry difficulties around supply chain, but this is the way to go. The way we feel for a big old, automotive OEM in the U.S. to do these things gradually and conservatively. Okay, our next pick in the space is Hilton Worldwide Holdings. Obviously, with the reopening of the economy comes the reopening of travel. Now, we've always been a little cautious. During the reopening process, we've been a little cautious on the hotel side for the simple reason that, yes, we expect consumer to recover rapidly, and we certainly see that consumers are really anxious to get out the door and to see the world again, get back on vacation, experience the services and the travel they didn't before. There's a concern that the kind of event we're holding today, a virtual event rather than an in-person event, means that business travel will be forever crimped. But what we're seeing is business travel is coming back gradually, and combined with the consumer travel, we see a restoration in business travel over time, and just much more consumer room demand and consumer travel than we've seen in the past. So this is a well-run organization. And so in addition to the, kind of macro factors like vaccines and reopening that are helping the overall industry, this is a company that is extremely efficient, and their RevPAR, the revenue per room, the way they operate on a franchise basis, they've kind of become a pure play franchisor of hotels with the spin-off of the timeshare business and the sale of some additional company-owned hotels. It's a company with a solid development pipeline. It's certainly got a lot of well-known brands, and their loyalty program is, I know personally, the loyalty program is something that people pay attention to. So this is one of our best picks in that space. Our next pick, Tractor Supply. This is a retailer that serves the kind of, I won't call it the rural homeowner, but there's the kind of the ex-urban, the suburban, the rural home, somewhere in the middle there. The people that are, a lot of people that now live in the suburbs, outside the suburbs, that might have a little extra land, that might have some pets, that might even have, some chickens or horses. But generally, what they really do is they really serve the kind of the home market. And what we've seen is we've talked about this theme over the past certainly year and a half. But the happy, healthy home, and get and you know, may not just. Not just the home, but the yard and activities, et cetera. So, we think COVID-19 accelerated growth for this company because everyone wanted to make their home space more attractive. Now, and we don't think those trends go away as the pandemic recedes because everyone has gotten accustomed to these hybrid work models, hybrid learn models. So, as John mentioned, we at Argus will be back in the office, but we'll be probably maintaining something like a hybrid lifestyle. We'll be spending, let's put it this way, we'll be spending more time at home working, even though it won't be all the time, than we did prior to the pandemic. And I think that's a pretty common thing. So this is another company that's done a terrific job with their brand building initiatives, their loyalty programs. They've gone omni-channel and they're using the success in the physical retail world to accelerate their online sales as well. And we like retailers that have a blended approach to physical retail, treating their shops as, so to speak, fulfillment centers and accelerating their online sales. It's another company that is feeling good about their cash flows, raising their dividend a year ago. We look for them to do it again. And so let's move on to one more name in the space, which is the original leader when it comes to splitting physical sales with online sales. Williams-Sonoma, Chris Gray, our experienced retail analyst, one of his favorite picks forever and ever, and certainly his favorite pick in the specialty retail space. It's again another name that during the COVID-19 crisis had some of their stores closed for a while, but mainly the stores were open. But particularly, they were able, because they had such an experience, such an established position on the online side, they were able to keep their sales momentum going. And it's a company that Chris really likes, given their ability to work with their designers. It's shown that they can, they have what Chris calls their rare knack for building brands and product lines from scratch. So in addition to, the kind of you associate the kind of kitchen goods with this firm, they've done, they're in quite a lot of other areas, furniture, et cetera, like, and they've really been succeeded in carving out a place for that kind of Williams-Sonoma brand. It's another company that should be well positioned. We saw a tremendous explosion in new homes and existing home sales in the early days of the pandemic. That's moderated a little bit, but it seems like the trend towards millennial ho household formation is firmly in place, whether that's an apartment or a new home. And I think we're going to see continued momentum and continued demand for Williams-Sonoma products right here. Again, this is not a super high dividend payer, but they're a consistent dividend grower. At 3 times, they raised their dividend during the pandemic, and they're currently yielding in that kind of 1.5 to 2% range. So, John, okay, let's move on to Walmart. And I'm sorry, I kind of forgot I was going to do the Walmart call. So that let's do that one. Walmart is another, obviously the leader in the mass market, and this is a company that was very well positioned heading into the pandemic in the sense that they really were considered an essential business. They really didn't shut their stores at all, and the consumers that limited their visits to supermarkets also made a point of getting by Walmart for all their needs and their goods. And this is a company that has spent years and years and years developing their inventory, their RFID tracking system. So they are extremely f efficient in preparing for, seasonal trends, whether it's the upcoming, Valentine's Day, or whether it's, Christmas or Halloween or Thanksgiving, whatever it might be. They're always well positioned in advance. They use their store, they're big stores, but they use their store aisles very efficiently. And at a time when the supply chain has really been challenging, this is a company that's using its financial strength to invest in supply chain and technology, and to keep its stores operating and fully stocked. Another thing this store has done is it's been able to kind of maintain its margins, even though it's raised pay for its associates across the board. And it is one of the largest employers in the U.S. But Walmart is also cognizant that its associates, its salespeople are also a big slug of its customers, so that's their ability to sustain margins even as they're raising wages for literally hundreds of thousands of people is very impressive. The return of investment continued to go up, for example, even as they were doing this. We think the company is going to be continue to move cautiously in international markets. It's focusing on faster growing markets. It's not trying to be a kind of company that is in every single market it goes into. It's going after markets including our North American neighbors to the north and south, and also the big Asian opportunities. And again, a store that if you go in the store, the first thing you see are the place to pick up online sales for ship to store. And just whether it's ship to store or ship to home, their online business is going great guns. And finally, on the dividend front, another company that increases its dividend every year, not a great deal, but every year, and the current yield is about a 1.5%.
All right, Jim, I will step in here and give you a break for a little bit, and we'll move to the energy sector. So the energy sector is one of the smaller sectors in the S&P 500 at about 3%, but the energy sector is certainly delivering performance in 2022. It's up 24% year to date, while the broad market is down 8%. And I think it's a case in point why it makes sense to have some diversification in your portfolio. Energy's not going to outperform every year, but it outperformed a year ago and it's doing well this year. So if you're going to have energy in your portfolio, we think Devon Energy, DVN, is a good one to focus on. Why is energy doing so well right now? Well, it helps that a barrel of West Texas crude is just about $90 right now, and that was below $30 at the start of the pandemic. So it has tripled over the past couple of years. $90 selling is good, especially when you're Devon and you're located primarily in the Permian Basin in West Texas and New Mexico, and your finding costs are as low as you're going to get outside of Saudi Arabia at about $35 a barrel. If you go off deep water in the Gulf of Mexico, you're 60, 70, 80 a barrel, which is profitable now. If you're up in the oil sands in Alberta, you're about $100 a barrel. So the Permian is the place to be. That's where Devon is. It's making a ton of money right now with oil prices as high as they are. And interestingly, we like what management is doing at Devon. Under these kinds of conditions, a lot of energy companies would be going full guns blazing on increasing production, focusing on production at literally all costs. However, Devon focuses more on free cash flow and the cash generated by that production than it does on absolute production. And with that kind of focus, this is a company that has paid a dividend for almost 30 years in a row. That stands out when you think about the energy companies that slashed dividends, omitted dividends, or even went bankrupt, during the early stages of the pandemic. And they've also done something innovative where they've got a quarterly dividend that they pay, good times and bad. And then when times are good, they've instituted a variable dividend where they'll share those excess profits with shareholders. And the company's current dividend yield is right around 4%. So a good value idea, a high yielding stock here from the energy sector. Okay, now let's move on to financial services. And this is a sector that we have an overweight on. And again, this is a cyclical sector that we like with interest rates headed higher. And we anticipate that the yield curve will be steepening. That is a good time to be investing in businesses that lend. Okay, so financial services is about 12% of the overall market. You're probably going to have a few different financial services stocks in your portfolio. PNC is one of our top ideas. It is a regional bank. Lot of mortgage and car loans. So the rising rates are going to help it increase its spread income. The company is growing by acquisition. The banking industry continues to consolidate, and PNC last year closed on a Sunbelt bank that has extended the footprint from PNC into faster growing parts of the country. PNC management is well accustomed to integrating new businesses, and it's expecting more than 20% EPS accretion this year in 2022. So above and beyond the impact from rising rates, you're going to see an impact to earnings growth from this acquisition. The company has its capital plans approved every year by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve usually waves a nice green flag, keep going. And with a 9% increase in the dividend last year and buying back almost $3 billion in stock, this is a value idea. We get a lot of questions. Do you like growth stocks? Do you like value stocks? We like stocks that we think are going to outperform. Lately, those have been growth stocks the past 10 years. But as we go through our presentation today, you're certainly going to hear about some value ideas in the banking group. One is PNC Financial with a PE of about 14 compared to the market PE of 20 to 21. So PNC Financial is a top pick for us in the financial group. We'll move on to the next one. And that is the life insurance company, Prudential Financial, another value stock trading at 8x earnings with a 4% yield. The insurance industry is different business model from most of the companies we're going to talk about today. And investors in insurance companies don't focus as much on earnings per share as they focus on return on equity. And price to book ratio is as important as PE for this group, whereas in many other groups, analysts don't even bother with price to book anymore. However, Prudential has very high returns on equity, mid-teens, 14.5% average over the past 10 years. And that compares to the industry average of 9%. So it is a profitable company. It's focusing its growth initiatives overseas. That's where there's more life insurance opportunities than in the, relatively wealthy and almost fully insured US. So it's got global growth opportunities. Prudential is a consistent double-digit dividend grower, a value idea at 8x earnings with a 4% yield. And now we'll stay in financial services and we'll look at a different kind of financial services company. That's S&P Global Inc. The first two we've looked at have been more spread businesses, PNC and Prudential. Standard and Poor, S&P Global Inc. is a more of a transaction business model in the financial services group. And transactions have been a great business up until this recent rising interest rate spate. S&P was on our top picks list in 2021. It was one of the outperformers. It rose more than 45%. S&P Global has a couple of very, very high margin and lucrative businesses. It rates credit securities, bonds, AA, AAA, A, B, so forth. That's about a 50% plus margin business. And it also licenses its indexes to ETF manufacturers and index companies. Which build investment, passive investment products around those indexes. and that is a 70% margin business. So S&P has a couple of very good businesses. It's got a very transparent management team, a long record of this management team under promising at the beginning of the year and then over delivering and raising guidance as the years go on. Scores high on our ESG rankings from our ESG partner, Just Capital. And like some of the others that we've talked about, has that history of growing its dividends at least 10% a year over the past 5 or 10 years. Again, a very important signal for management that they're confident in the business model and in the near-term outlook for the company. Okay, I think that is it for financial services. Now we'll go over to healthcare. And healthcare, like financial services, is one of the bigger sectors in the stock market. It's about 13%. You're going to have healthcare stocks in your portfolios. Catalent is one maybe you haven't heard of, like you probably have heard of Eli Lilly or Johnson and Johnson. But Catalent is a newer company. It's a mid-cap company in healthcare, and it's doing a lot of the pharmaceutical manufacturing outsourcing for the Johnson and Johnsons, the Lillys, the Bristol Myerses, the Novartises of the world. Those are Catalent's companies. It's very focused on gene therapies, which we think is going to be an exploding area for the healthcare sector over the next 5 to 10 years. They've got the catalyst of a new CEO who's come on board and is going to want to deliver for shareholders. And the company recently reported very good earnings growth. Earnings were up 43% year over year. Revenues were up 35%. This, Jim, is one of those growth stocks that's gotten caught up in the market's move from growth to value. Nothing wrong with the business here. A good opportunity, we think, for Catalent. Next idea is going to be CVS Health Corp. This is more of a value stock in a growth sector. It has that double-digit dividend growth record. It's trading at 13 times earnings below the market multiple. It's got a 2% yield. That's going to be higher than the 1.3% market multiple. Business is good. Management has already raised its 2022 outlook. It gave an early year outlook in December, and then when they reported their fourth quarter results, raised it already. So very positive trends at CVS Health Corp and one of our top healthcare ideas for 2022. Let's move on to our next one, McKesson Corp. Jim, here's one where we've already raised our target price on McKesson Corp. So not every stock has fallen out of bed in 2022. We have a new target price on McKesson of 310 now. Pharmaceutical distribution has been a great business with COVID-19. It's going to remain a good business post COVID-19 because everybody who's been worried about going to the doctor's office during COVID is now going and getting prescriptions filled. Here's a company that's guiding analysts and investors to 30% earnings growth in 2022, hiked its dividend 12% a couple of months ago. And despite all of that growth, Jim offers value with a PE of 11 times. So McKesson is a healthcare stock we like. And one more healthcare idea is Moderna Inc. And Jim, this is kind of one where you can have your cake and eat it too. Moderna is certainly a growth stock. Its earnings are growing from, I think, a loss last year to over $28 in 2022. So, but the stock has fallen sharply, so it's trading at about 6 times those earnings. And so for 6 times earnings, you get earnings that we have a lot of confidence in. Moderna delivered 800 million COVID-19 shots in 2021. We think it's going to be $3 billion in 2022. They're working on that next generation of COVID-19 vaccine. Chances are we're going to need it. They're also working on a flu vaccine, a respiratory virus vaccine, and a vaccine to treat CMV, which is the most common cause of birth defects. So this is certainly a growth idea, but it's been hit so hard by investors running out of growth stocks in these past few weeks that it's trading at only 6 times earnings. So that's it for the healthcare sector, Jim. Now we'll move over to the industrial sector. This is another stock we had on our list last year as a top performer. It returned more than 80%. Nothing has changed for Old Dominion from 2021 to 2022. The trucks are still the biggest market share in the transport industry, and it's not as competitive as the rails because the industry is so fragmented. Old Dominion's got a great record for delivering goods on time and not dinging up goods. So it's able to charge premium prices and still deliver fair and high quality service. And it uses that extra cash it generates to reinvest in its equipment and in its distribution centers. We think on the other side of the pandemic, the supply chain is going to be even more important than ever. And ODFL, I mentioned earlier, we like the companies that outperform over the 3 months, 1 year, and 5 years. Jim, I'm not going to tell you that I'm smarter than the market, but if I see a company that is outperforming over all these periods, hey, let's see what they're doing right. And one of the things that ODFL does is it's that consistent double-digit dividend grower. So one more industrial idea, Jim, and that is AECOM. This is an engineering and construction company. And the big idea here is infrastructure spending. We've got a bipartisan trillion-dollar infrastructure spending bill that has been passed and signed and is going to be spent over the next 5 to 10 years on different road and water and infrastructure projects. That's what AECOM does. The company has been sharpening its business model, and it's been divesting non-core businesses, reducing the debt on its balance sheet, improving its margins. And as the infrastructure spending bill works its way in through the economy, we think AECOM is a stock, a company, and an ACM is a stock that's going to benefit. And I will turn it over to you.
John, thanks for that overview on those important sectors. And we have one REIT pick today, and that is Host Hotels and Resorts. And the REIT structure is kind of unique. And we've got the thing about the REIT sector is you've got timber REITs like Weyerhaeuser, you have apartment REITs like Equity Residential and AvalonBay, you've got storage center REITs like Public Storage. You've got healthcare doctor's office REITs like HealthPeak, and there's of course the traditional office REITs such as Boston Properties. It's a very diversified sector, and Host Hotels has a very unique operating model. What they do is they acquire hotels and operate them. They host current when as we were putting this together around year end, Host owned 80 luxury hotel properties with about 4,500 rooms, and they really do, they do partner with all of the companies that you're familiar with, Marriott's and the Ritz-Carlton's, Westin's, Sheraton's, Hilton, of course, and Hyatt, as well as overseas brands like Novotel and Swissotel and Ibiza and et cetera. So what we think is good about their model is by focusing on the kind of the luxury brands, they can really control their predictability of their business because as long assuming the economy is open. When it's open, these hotels tend to be very high occupancy. The company has consistently outperformed street expectations. Most, more recently, and they'll be reporting very soon, but they recently posted their third quarter FFO, which came, was compared to a prior year loss, no surprise, in those pandemic quarters. But this is also one of the only, this is the only lodging REIT with an investment grade credit rating from Moody's. And that way, Host is an attractive holding for investors who want to be exposed to the lodging industry recovery and want to play a very specialized play on the luxury side. Now, the stock does not currently pay a dividend, but we think their dividend paying potential is significant. Very unusual for REIT not to distribute to shareholders, but we think it's only a matter of time before they begin to pay. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the technology sector. I mean, REITs is a market weight sector for us. Technology, John, as you know, has been an over recommended overweight sector for Argus for many, many years at this point. And that's because of the kind of continued expansion in technology. You don't need to go back more than a couple of years when technology was a little more than 20 to 25% of the market. It's currently almost 30% of the market, and that's after carving approximately 5% of the sector out into the communication services sector. So on an unadjusted basis, technology really is, more than a third of the market. And I think the difference today with a few years ago is technology companies used to sell to one another. Now every company is a technology user, and technology companies sell to everyone. And we're certainly seeing that with a company like Cloudflare, which is a software company, a top pick for Joe Bonner, that enables companies to operate cloud-based network services and get their applications to run more securely and faster. And they can do this with their kind of monitoring software that clients can use, and with no need to add new hardware, change code, install new software. So it's all remotely monitored and maintained. And because everyone, of course, pretty much every company has some kind of internet presence now, but companies are now more attuned to how important it is to have a cutting-edge enterprise, cutting-edge internet presence. So enterprises everywhere are, upgrading their services, and they want those apps to run as efficiently as possible. They want their communications with their customers to be, absolutely seamless and top-notch. And this is a company we expect to grow organically, but it's also going to make the occasional tuck-in acquisition to increase the value of its platform. Our next name that we're going to look at today is a very familiar name, and as John said about Old Dominion, this was on our list last year. NVIDIA Corp, this is a truly a transformative company. A little bit of history: they were always a provider of gaming GPUs under the GeForce brand, and gamers were always willing to pay up for their gaming cards, but based on some technology that was developed really maybe about, I would say at this point, maybe about 12, 15, 12 years ago, there began a realization that the high quality of the performance of graphic computing cards, which is to say in areas like inference and repetition, et cetera, were actually really lent themselves to AI, machine learning, inference, and everything that you need for an AI implementation in a cloud data center. And so now they work alongside, these GPUs work alongside CPUs for application acceleration and lots more things in the AI data centers. They're enabling this new approach. Now, it's a gaming business still core to them, but data center, what with the acquisition of Mellanox and other things, has become absolutely instrumental. They're also a leader in autonomous vehicles with their drive technology. Now that's slowed a little bit. It's not quite getting off the ground as fast as some people think, but it's a potential game changer and probably their biggest potential market. Now, that as of yesterday, NVIDIA announced they're going to step away from acquiring ARM. I don't think we ever felt that ARM was a sure thing. In fact, we all along we felt it was a reach, and so we're not surprised that deal's not going forward. The market similarly barely responded to the what seemed to be a fait accompli. So we think NVIDIA will do fine without ARM Holdings, and we recommend establishing or adding to positions in this company because it's kind of the preeminent vehicle for participation in the AI economy from the semiconductor perspective. Our next technology pick, PayPal Holdings, John, a good example of a stock that's been caught up in the tech selling whirlwind. And it's possibly, potentially because of the fact that, there's a reset. People are thinking, well, gee, how much, how much of a, how many, payment intermediaries do we need out there? There's all these other companies like Block, which is the former Square. There's obviously the incumbents, the Visas and MasterCards. But what we think is this company is growing in leaps and bounds because it's that ability to that consumers love, that if they're not, you might have a Prime account, but if you saw something and you wanted to buy it and you're on that new company site and you're like, oh my gosh, I got to create a whole new account to buy a pair of snowshoes or whatever it is, I'm on this site. But there's PayPal as your option. And PayPal is a really unique position that way. There's nothing really equivalent to that. There's no equivalent service where you go on a new or strange website and you don't want to create an account with them. You can go right to your PayPal. And so it's just become an enormously differentiated and leading edge platform for that. And the company, despite being around for a long time, much longer than, the Squares or Blocks of the world, it's remaining in this high growth phase. And our analyst Steve Biggar sees this continuing to grow in high teens revenue growth with some good operating leverage, turning that into mid-20 EPS growth. And they've been historically been innovative in the payment space, and in addition to that familiarity advantage, we think it's going to use some technology advantage to grow payment volumes and also to push, they're well established internationally, but that's a big runway for them, a lot more room over there, and to get more and more merchant acceptance. Okay, and one of the other names we want to highlight today, this is a company that has kind of, I'd say they've weathered the storm, John. They've weathered the storm of the tech sell-off in January much better than many of their rivals. And I think it's simply because there's a realization that this company has kind of hit it out of the ballpark with every mobile phone technology. They led in 3G, they led in 4G, and now they are really benefiting as 5G goes mainstream. There's always a concern that Apple would develop its own thin modem. They don't. Apple does not use the processor, the Snapdragon processor, but it does use the Qualcomm modem. But we think it's more important that Qualcomm maintain its royalty licensing business with Apple than it sells silicon to Apple. And you can see where Qualcomm is going because they're really highlighting sales of those Snapdragon central processors to the major handset makers, whether that's Oppo, Vivo, Lenovo, Huawei, all those firms over there that are really taking off. And this is a company also that's been in near constant litigation, whether it's with countries like the U.S. or the European Union or Korea or China, or whether it's companies such as Nokia or Texas Instruments or you name it, and almost all and Apple finally, and then pretty much all those issues are behind. So we think the company can finally focus on leading the market, in this case, the 5G market, which we expect to be in a multi-year kind of rollout. And John, let me turn it back to you.
Okay, Jim. Well, thank you for the review of those stocks. One last stock to talk about before we get to the questions, and that is American Electric Power Company, Inc., ticker symbol AEP. So, we talked about the energy sector earlier being 3% of the market. Well, so is the utility sector. It's about 3% of the market. And while it's not necessarily outperforming this year or in regular years, the beta on the utility sector is about 0.4. So it's 60% less volatile than the broad market. And by having a utility stock or two in your portfolio, there's a chance that your portfolio holds up better, when the stock market falls 7% or 5% as it did in January. And if utility is not going to be a fast growth sector, then let's find a good value in the utility sector. And that's why we present American Electric Power. It's got a dividend yield of 3.5%. that's higher than the average dividend yield of 3.1%. It's got a price to book ratio of 1.9 versus the industry's average of 2.2. And it's got a PE ratio of 18, whereas the PE ratio average for the industry is 23. So, Jim, the utilities can offset some of the volatility of the broad market, and you might as well find value in utilities. And that's what I think we have here with AEP. So that wraps up our prepared commentary, and now we will move to the Q&A. Okay, the questions are coming in, and we'll start off with a kind of high-level one. That is, do you see a sector rotation from growth to value? Jim, you have some thoughts on that?
I do, John. And this is what I would say is, I think, we like value on a cyclical basis, and we like growth on a secular basis. And let me explain what I mean there. So you've got a lot of factors that are pushing investors away from growth stocks right now. And top of the list is obviously rising rates. Growth stocks are perceived as vulnerable in a rising rate environment, and it's also cyclical stocks, are seen as more attractive. Financial services stocks benefit from rising rates. Rising rates are associated with rising prices. Wealth in the ground stocks, that is, you talked about the change in commodities and energy prices. Those things benefit. So in the near term, as the market tries to get used to higher interest rates, we see investors favoring value right here. But our research, John, has demonstrated that growth. That the market can tolerate interest rates, and that we expect this rate cycle to end at a relatively low rate level, historically speaking. So for the long term, all the things that are driving investment in the growth sectors, which would mainly include the digitization of the world, the rise of a global middle class that wants a lot of new electronic devices, the rise of the internet, 5G, mobility, AI data center, and then you're talking about electric powertrain for vehicles, autonomous vehicles, robotics, Internet of Things. All these secular drivers are going to keep demand strong for growth over the long period. And let me turn it back to you, John.
Yep. Okay. Jim, I'll take these next couple of questions. One is, what possible companies that will do potential spin-offs can investors on this panel look at? And you know what I will do is I would point you to a weekly list that we published on Yahoo Finance Plus. It's been a couple of weeks ago. Let's see, where is it? Stock Picks weekly list. Yes, that was on January 31st. We published a list of stocks that we think are breakup candidates, including, well, Johnson and Johnson and General Electric, we already know about. GlaxoSmithKline and Unilever are a couple from the consumer area. Colfax is an industrial company that's splitting off its healthcare businesses. Some of the defense companies, the growth has slowed, so maybe Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics are candidates there. And Teva Pharmaceuticals has quite an array of healthcare properties that don't seem to work very well together, and that may be a spin-off candidate as well. But we've got a weekly list coming out every week on Yahoo Finance Plus, and that's an area to look for ideas. Next question was, what companies do you see falling in the category of dividend aristocrats or like Nucor? So let me guide you here to a theme portfolio. We have six different theme portfolios on the Yahoo Finance platform. One of them is our dividend growth theme model. That was updated at the end of December. There are 30 stocks in that theme model portfolio that are all the double-digit dividend growers that, we've talked about. So Names that we've talked about today include Old Dominion, that's in the portfolio. S&P Global is in the portfolio. We touched on that. Also, companies like Microsoft, Automatic Data Processing, Sherwin-Williams, Masco, BlackRock, JP Morgan Chase, Home Depot, Advance Auto. That's one of the things we like about this double-digit dividend growth theme. It doesn't drop you just in one sector, but you're able to put together a diversified portfolio of companies that are all committed to that aggressive dividend growth. So, again, that's a theme portfolio that is always available on the Yahoo Finance Plus site. So, Jim, here's a market-related question. Do you recommend buying the current dip now or waiting a bit?
Well, John, thank you for that question. And let me talk generally. We think the dip right now is related to fears of inflation, which we're actually inflation is real, but we think the inflation is being significantly driven by the combination of the pandemic, which is worsening the supply chain situation. And it's also being driven by the rise in interest rates. But our research has demonstrated that the market will eventually rise in a period of rising interest rates. And we also feel that the Fed has got an aggressive set of goals in the next 2 years, but it's going to be very flexible and may not have to raise rates quite as much, particularly if we get a more kind of more moderate or more normalized demand environment, supply chain heals itself, and some of those pricing pressures go away. So, we're bullish on the market, and we were recommending the market at the end of the year, John, when it was priced, about 5% higher, whether if you're talking about S&P stocks or 8% higher if you're talking about NASDAQ stocks. So we would recommend buying the dip. It's almost inevitably been true whether you bought the market in March of 2020 on a real deep sell-off or whether you bought 5 and 10% corrections that you're able to get in at more attractive prices in a long-term rising market.
Thank you, Jim. We've got time for a couple more questions. Here's
Sure.
one. How will you assess company dividends and interest rate increases? I'm happy to talk about that.
Yeah.
So, we're anticipating that interest rates are going to rise. Typically, that can slow corporate profitability because interest rates can cut into margins. But rising interest rates often, especially with a steepening yield curve, signal a good period of economic growth coming ahead. So for the stocks that we've talked about here, Jim mentioned that dividend yield sweet spot, probably between 1% and 2.5%. These are growth and value, growth and income companies. And a rising interest rate really shouldn't affect their ability to pay a dividend or grow a dividend. And again, I mentioned the portfolio of companies that have grown their dividends at least 10% a year for 5 years in a row, some of them much longer than that. That's where it's part of the company's culture. Let me say a word about the other spending plans that are still working their way through Congress. To pay for some of those spending plans, one of the thoughts is to raise taxes on share buybacks. So if the government is going to do that, I think you're going to see companies switch out of share buybacks and more into dividend growth. So that could be a positive for dividend. But let me also say, rising interest rates probably aren't going to help the stocks that are yielding 8%, 9%, or 10% for two reasons. One, as interest rates rise, investors seeking income will move out of stocks and into higher rates. And two, the dividend yields above, 7, 8% may well signal that a company is in distress, and those higher interest payments could actually force a company to cut its dividends. So the sweet spot of dividends in that 1 to 2.5% should be okay. The high dividends may be a little bit more at risk with higher prices. And Jim, the last question I want to address here is kind of like a technical question about this presentation. This presentation listed target prices that our analysts had put on these stocks. And the presentation was prepared about a month and a half ago, and there's been a lot of volatility in the marketplace. Some stocks have widened the gap between their target prices, and some, we talked about McKesson, has already reached its target price. So we've had to increase that. I think what I would say about our analysts and target prices, when an Argus analyst raises a stock to a buy, the analyst is anticipating that the stock will outperform the market on a risk-adjusted basis over the next 12 months. And that tends to be at least a 10 to 12 to 15% increase. Then as stocks approach their target prices, the analysts have to decide, am I going to lower my rating or am I going to increase my target price? So we're in the middle of the earnings season, and I think a lot of these stocks, the analysts are readjusting their target prices. But my feeling is, having, you know, surveyed the analysts and having them given us these stocks for our best picks for 2022, you're probably going to see higher target prices on these companies in the Argus reports that are going to be published on the Yahoo Finance Plus website over these next few weeks. But Jim, you may have a final thought on that as
well. I do, John. I wanted to say, generally, we've got a lot of, you know, and thanks everyone for their hundreds of, you know, people on the call. And so, not surprisingly, many, many more questions that we can get to today. But many of them have been on the order of, you know, we talk about Hilton and someone will ask, what do you think about Marriott versus Hilton? We talk about GM, someone will say, what do you think about GM versus Ford? Our last question was, you know, will Intel ever reach the foundry production levels of a Taiwan semiconductor? Where does it stand with AMD? I want to point Yahoo Finance Plus users to the fact that, you know, the totality of Argus analysis is available to you. And for instance, if you were to go and take a look at that Ford note, you'd get a good view of what they're doing with their F-150 Lightning, which is their electric pickup truck, you know, double the amount of orders they're taking with the goal of getting up to 600,000. You get a lot more detail on GM's schedule than, you know, we went after 25 stocks in a very brief time today. We can't get to that level of detail, but you can get these questions answered simply by delving into that rich, you know, rich amount of data available. When you talk about Marriott versus Hilton, Hilton's revenue is under $2 billion in a quarter. Marriott's is over $3 billion. Yet you'd quickly see that EBITDA margin for Hilton is higher than the EBITDA margin for Marriott. And similarly, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Intel's so-called Intel, you know, 2.0, their foundry production plans. And we'll be talking about AMD more, which today posted its highest ever CPU market share. So just John, there's just so many of these questions can be answered by delving deep into the information available to users of the Yahoo Finance Plus platform.
Absolutely right, Jim. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We hope we're able to do this again in the near future. And as Jim said, continue to access the Argus Insight and analytics and ratings and forecasts on the Yahoo Finance Plus section of Yahoo Finance. Thank you, and have a great rest of the day.